Eddie, the Collegiate Freshman. Chapter 5. Spring Semester, Part 1. With spring finally arriving, Eddie is finally getting around to building a few new dune buggies. Johnson decided that he wants a dune buggy so he can get off campus a little more. And Bobby B. has decided he wants one too. Finding out that his BSA motorcycle is not too suited for winter or during the rain, Bobby B. too has decided to get something a lot more practical, such as a dune buggy. And Eddie has acquired 3 frames and 2 wrecked Porsche 911s and is ready to start building them. The 3rd frame is reserved for Eddie's brother, who will be getting his driver's license soon. The university track team had their best winter season ever, and now it's on to the spring season. With the team stronger than ever, all anyone can see are more victories in their future. The team now has 6 training sleds for the sand track and none for the gravel track, which has been replaced by an all-weather track. Eddie has built quite a few of the units for the university, the high school, and for a few individuals. Dr. Paxton and Coach Herndon has taken the team's training to a new level, combining the interval training with resistance training on the sled. In the new workout, the runner drags the resistance sled for 220 yards on the sand track, heads over to the track and sprints for 440 yards, and then takes a recovery lap. Heading back to the sand track and dragging the sled again, they repeat the exercise. And, as with the standard interval training workout, once dragging the resistance sled for 220 yards proves too difficult, the weight on the sled is lowered, but the sprinting distance remains at 220 yards. One morning, in the early spring, as the university team is headed out to the track to practice, Kathy, out of the blue, comments to Eddie, "Hey, how come I have to walk out to the track?" Reminiscing the days where the tribe would often carry their girlfriends down the main road to the pizzeria, Eddie puts Kathy on his shoulders and carries her out to the track. Paula looks at Mark and asks him, "What are you waiting for?" Paula quickly ends up on Mark's shoulders. In no time, Bobby B. is carrying Erica, Johnson is carrying Barbara, and Braden is carrying Wendy. Hoffo is sad because Tessa is on the swimming team and is in her dorm sleeping. Looking at Hoffo and Mitchell, Mark comments, "It looks like you guys got off easy." Mitchell reminds Mark, "Next year, Amber will be here." Mitchell's comment just announced Amber's intentions after high school. Following the team out to the track, Dr. Braun and the other coaches all watch as the tribe carry their women to the track. Coach Herndon comments, "Well, there's a workout I've never seen before." Dr. Braun points out, "And those women are big. It's not like they weigh 90 pounds. Paying close attention to the shot doc, Dr. Bonamo exclaims, "And just take a look at that. Bradshaw is doing squats with Erica on his shoulders." Dr. Braun adds, "These guys certainly take this sport seriously." Once the team is at the track, Coach Herndon remarks, "Now, they are all doing squats with the women on their shoulders." The coaching staff catches up to the team as the guys continue doing squats. Apparently, a competition has developed to see who can go the longest. As he is doing squats, Bobby B. claims victory, stating, "You guys are slowing down. I won." Eddie disputes Bobby B.'s claim, stating, "We're all still going. You haven't won yet." Braden chimes in, telling Bobby B., "I'm way ahead of you, bro. You ain't won nothing yet." Bobby B. rebuffs, "Yeah, but Wendy is a lot lighter than Erica." Bobby B. does have a point. The competition goes on and in the end, Bobby B. is the last man standing. Kathy and Paula weigh a little more than Erica, so Mark and Eddie claim they had more weight on their shoulders. Bobby B. will not hear it, claiming victory nevertheless. The coaching staff allowed the competition to continue, but then it's down to business. Dr. Braun announces, "It looks like some of you just had a pretty good warm-up. The rest of you, take a warm-up lap, and then we'll get started." The guys in the squatting competition apparently get a pass on today's warm-up, but immediately hit the training sled before they cool down too much. During the warm-up lap, McCutcheon tells Leggett, "My brother warned me about those guys last year. He told me that, if I don't get rid of them, I won't have a place on the team." Leggett reminds McCutcheon, "It's already happened. You're an alternate, and I got bumped down a few notches. As long as they are around, it's their show." McCutcheon adds, "From what I hear them saying, next year there might be a few more coming up." Leggett informs McCutcheon, "I'm graduating this year. You'll have two more years of this." McCutcheon tells Leggett, "I got to take them down somehow." Leggett offers, "Just let me know how you're going to do it. I'll help." Leggett, who was supposed to be the team's star sprinter this year, is one step away from joining McCutcheon as an alternate. After the warm-up lap, the team begins their workout. The sprinters hit the training sled, and the distance team begins the interval training workout. Halfway into the workout, referring to McCutcheon and Leggett, Paula mentions to Kathy, "Those guys haven't done squat all day." Kathy replies, "Our guys did squats. So did we. We were the weight. That counts, right?" Paula laughs, but points out, "I don't like it that McCutcheon pointed over to where we all park a few times. Watch them. They are definitely up to something." Before taking her turn on the training sled, Kathy mentions, "McCutcheon was really ticked off when Braden got a dune buggy." Kathy then takes her turn on the training sled as Paula awaits her turn. When practice comes to an end, Kathy mentions to Paula, "I see what you mean. McCutcheon and Lugnut haven't done squat all day. All they did is talk and take a few recovery laps around the track." Joking around, Paula tells Kathy, "Hey, give them a break. I think I saw them sprint once." Kathy comments, "No wonder they are alternates. They are acting like they are on vacation or something." The women head into the locker room, wondering why McCutcheon and Leggett even bother to stay on the team. They are both subpar, and neither seems to want to improve their performance. In the men's locker room, Eddie tells Bobby B. and Johnson, "I got some good news for you guys." Johnson asks, "What's that?" Eddie informs them, "I got your dune buggy frames, and I have two 911 drive trains and front ends, and they are in great shape." Johnson exclaims, "Awesome." Bobby B. exclaims, "Wow. I can't wait." Eddie then tells Johnson and Bobby B., "I need you guys to help me out." Johnson comments, "Uh-oh. Here it comes. I didn't think it was going to be that easy." Eddie laughs and tells Johnson and Bobby B., "I need you guys to pick out the color you want. I need to order the body." Bobby B., wasting no time, announces, "I'll take red." Johnson asks, "Does it come in silver?" Eddie replies, "No. But I might be able to swing getting you a custom color." Hearing the conversation, Braden yells across the locker room, "If I knew we can get a custom color, I would have picked gold to match all my gold medals." Johnson yells back, "Hey, thanks for the idea, bro. Maybe I'll get gold to match all my medals." Voicing his opinion, Mark yells out, "I wonder if you can get a dirt-colored dune buggy for Bobby B., so it will match the dirty shot put he's been tossing around." Bobby B. thought that issue was put to rest a long time ago, but apparently it hasn't. After today's locker room talk, everyone knows what's on the way for Johnson and Bobby B. The only question that remains is what color the dune buggies will be. Over the next few weeks, the university team delivers fantastic performances at all their meets. Eddie has been busy building Johnson's and Bobby B's dune buggies, hoping to get them done before summer break. Eddie has also been doing a lot of training at home with Kathy, both in their home gym and in their pool. Mark and Paula have been enjoying their own pool, looking forward to a summer in the sun. As Eddie and Kathy get to practice one Monday morning, They park in the area unofficially reserved for the tribe. Heading to the locker rooms, Eddie and Kathy notice the men's locker room has been closed off, with yellow tape across the door. Eddie mentions to Kathy, "I wonder what's up." Kathy replies, "Maybe you'll get the day off." Eddie remarks, "Well, I do have a few June buggies to build." As Kathy and Eddie are talking, Mark and Paula arrive. Paula asks, "What's going on?" Kathy replies, "We don't know. The men's locker room is closed." Eddie tells Mark, "It looks like we might get the day off." A few other team members arrive, and a discussion of what may be the problem arises. With no information, everything discussed is pure speculation. Braden emerges from the locker room in his police uniform and removes the yellow tape. Braden announces, "The men's locker room is now open. You may now enter and get dressed." The women who were standing around watching now head to their locker room. As the men enter their locker room, Braden calls Eddie and Kathy aside. Braden tells Eddie and Kathy, "You ain't gonna believe this shit." Kathy asks, "What's going on?" Braden explains, "The dean of students got an anonymous tip that Eddie was taking steroids, and that he's also selling them. The tipster said the steroids are in his locker." Totally in shock at what he is hearing, Eddie exclaims, "What?" Braden continues, "The dean had Eddie's locker searched, and Officer Levi found steroids. Officer Levi did the search. They wouldn't let me do anything but stand there and watch, because I'm on the team." Eddie exclaims, "I can't believe this shit. I'm not taking steroids or selling them." Kathy exclaims, "This is total bullshit." Braden agrees, telling them, "Yeah, I know. Something's going on. Somebody must have planted that shit there." Braden then tells Eddie, "The dean was in there, but he's gone now. He said he's not letting you back on the team until you talk with him. I wish I could tell you more, but there's an investigation starting." Eddie tells Braden, "You know what? I'm out of here. I'm not putting up with this shit." Kathy tells Eddie, "I'm coming with you." Eddie tells Kathy, "No. Go to practice. See what's being said. I want to hear this later." Braden tells Eddie, "I'll let you guys know what's going on." Braden heads into the locker room to get dressed for practice, and Eddie and Kathy step outside the locker area into the arena to talk for a moment. All upset, Eddie tells Kathy, "I'm just going home. I'm done with this place." Kathy explains, "Someone's trying to take you down. This is bullshit. You can't let them win." Kathy then tells Eddie, "Well, Braden said that they won't let you on the team until you talk to the dean." Eddie replies, "I'd love to hear what this is all about." Eddie kisses Kathy and heads home. Kathy heads to the locker room, wondering what in the world has happened. As Eddie is walking away, he runs into Dr. Braun. Dr. Braun asks Eddie, "Can I see you for a moment?" Figuring he might get some answers, Eddie replies, "Sure." Dr. Braun and Eddie walk to the office in the arena usually reserved for the meet officials. Dr. Braun explains, "Unfortunately, I have some bad news." Already knowing what is about to be said, Eddie sits back and listens. Dr. Braun continues, "Eddie, the dean got an anonymous tip that you are taking steroids and that you are selling them. He had your locker searched, and they found steroids. So, they have started an investigation. Until the investigation is complete, unfortunately you are suspended from the team. This was not my decision. It was the dean's decision." Shocked by the news, Eddie tells Dr. Braun, "I really don't know what to say. I'm not taking steroids, and I'm not selling them either." Dr. Braun tells Eddie, "I believe you. But, for some reason, the dean has taken full control of the situation." Dr. Braun tells Eddie, "They have asked that you submit to a urine test to check for steroids." Wanting to clear himself, Eddie asks, "When and where?" Dr. Braun answers, "You can submit the sample at the infirmary. I can tell you that the sooner you do it, the better. If you wait 3 weeks, they will claim that you waited in order to allow any steroids to leave your body. Sick of the crap someone is always putting him through, Eddie tells Dr. Braun, fine. I'll head there right now. And it's going to come out clean. Dr. Braun tells Eddie that would be a good start. I want to get this cleared up as much as you do. Eddie heads to the infirmary to submit his urine sample. He will then head home to work on Johnson's and Bobby B's June buggies. While Eddie is at the infirmary submitting his urine sample, track practice is held out on the field. Braden, who took part in conducting the investigation, is keeping his eyes and he is open for any information he can ascertain regarding Eddie's case. Braden has his list of suspects, but proving anything will be difficult, if not impossible. To make matters worse, Coach Herndon has the difficult task of finding someone to take Eddie's place in the 100-yard dash, the 220-yard dash, the 4x440 relay, and the mile medley relay in Eddie's absence. Now that the university has him under investigation, Eddie has a little more time on his hands. But Eddie doesn't care that he has been suspended from the track team. If they want to expel him, he couldn't care less. While out and about one day, Eddie becomes more curious about the street Mr. Crumb lives on. Mr. Crumb came to Eddie's mind simply because he was a troublemaker from the past in Eddie's life. Taking a drive to 2nd Street, Eddie is wondering whether Mr. Crumb's house may be for sale, since Mr. Crumb will be headed to jail for a long time. Having more time on his hands, Eddie is looking for a place to build a storage yard. Arriving at 2nd Street, Eddie notices a sign in Mr. Crumb's front yard telling the public that the house has been foreclosed upon and will be sold on the courthouse steps on the first Tuesday of the month. Eddie also notices that the firm Davies and Rice are handling the foreclosure for the bank. Eddie gets out of his MGB and takes a walk around the neighborhood. None of the houses seem to be occupied. All are in disrepair. None are worth much. Eddie thinks back to what Paula once said, that the street needs a bulldozer and an exorcist. On his way home, Eddie drives to the Davies and Rice Law firm, who also handled the closing when Eddie and Kathy bought their house in the woods. After waiting for a few minutes, Eddie is escorted to the office of Mr. John Davies. Eddie and Mr. Davies talk in depth about athletics at the high school. They both share their interesting stories, mostly revolving around confrontation involving the administration. Eddie finally gets the full and unedited version of how Mr. Davies lost his football scholarship, courtesy of Mr. Crumb. As it turns out, the circulated story is very accurate. Getting down to business, Eddie tells Mr. Davies, I want to buy Mr. Crumb's house on 2nd Street. And I want the other three houses too. Mr. Davies tells Eddie, well, let's talk about Crumb's house first. The title is clear, except for the foreclosure. There is no second mortgage. The taxes are up to date, and there are no liens. If you show up on the courthouse steps, I can just about assure you that you'll get it. There is absolutely no interest in that house or in that area. That street is pretty much a slum. Glad to hear what he thinks is good news, Eddie asks, how much will it cost? Mr. Davies replies, you'll have to bid on the house. It could go for $5,000. It could go for $50,000. Or it could go for $1 million if someone is stupid enough to bid it up that high. Eddie then asks Mr. Davies, so, what do I do? Mr. Davies explains, just show up on the first Tuesday of the month at the courthouse steps and bid on the house. By the way, that is the week after next. And you'll need to produce certified funds by the end of the day. Taking notes, Eddie is ready to go. Moving on, Eddie asks, how about the other three houses? Is there any way I can buy those? They are abandoned and just sitting there. Mr. Davies tells Eddie, the other three houses are owned by Carmen and Lang, LLP. They are a real estate development firm, and honestly, I'm sure they'd be glad to unload them. Quite surprised, Eddie asks, really? How do I find out? Mr. Davies tells Eddie, if you want, I can find out for you. I'll give them a call and see where they stand. Eddie replies, sure. I'd love to get all four properties. Mr. Davies tells Eddie to check back at the end of the week. Eddie then heads out, formulating a plan. When Kathy gets home, she finds Eddie relaxing on the sofa, deep in thought. Not used to seeing Eddie so idly sitting around, Kathy asks, hey, what's up? Eddie explains, I drove down 2nd Street today. Before Eddie can finish his sentence, Kathy exclaims, and you didn't ask me and Paula if we wanted to go. 2nd Street is the last place Paula would want to be seen, and it's not exactly Kathy's favorite place either. Driving down 2nd Street once was enough for Paula. Finishing what he was about to say, Eddie explains, Mr. Crumb's house has been foreclosed. And Mr. Davies thinks I might be able to buy the other three properties too. Kathy asks, why would you want to buy them? Eddie replies, so I can bulldoze the houses down. Thinking about what Eddie said, Kathy is very quiet. Kathy asks, so, you want to buy all four houses and just bulldoze them down? Eddie replies, yeah. Kathy asks, how is that fair? Eddie asks, what do you mean? Kathy replies, there's four houses, and you get to bulldoze them down all by yourself. I want to help. Eddie asks, so, I take it you want us to buy them too? Kathy replies, yeah. But, I want to be the one to bulldoze Mr. Crumb's house down. After what Kathy had to put up with Mr. Crumb, she'll take pleasure in bulldozing down his house. Kathy then asks Eddie, you're serious about this, aren't you? Eddie replies, yeah. I could use the land for something someday. After all, there's a lot of land there. If we bulldoze the houses down, it might look really good. Kathy replies, I see what you mean. Kathy tells Eddie, I'm calling Paula. Thinking that Kathy talking with Paula about buying the houses on 2nd Street will be quite amusing, Eddie tells Kathy, now, that's going to be a really interesting conversation. Why don't you just invite them over? Kathy replies, I think I'll do that. Or, maybe we can go out and get pizza. Kathy calls Paula and invites her and Mark out for pizza. Wanting to take a look at 2nd Street after they eat, and knowing that Paula probably would not want to come, Kathy suggests they drive separately. The two couples meet at the pizzeria, sitting at their usual table near the window. Eddie and Mark place their orders and, when they return to the table, Kathy announces, "We have some news." Paula comments, "Okay, this is going to be interesting. I can tell." Paula's superpowers are apparently at work. Kathy asks Mark and Paula, "Do you know how Mr. Crumb got arrested and has been in jail for the last whole semester, and then some?" Mark mentions, "Yeah. It's too bad that they didn't lock him up when we were in high school." Eddie adds, "Ain't that the truth?" It seems everyone is glad to hear the principal is in jail. The worst part, for Mr. Crumb anyway, is that his bail was set very high, and no one has stepped up and bailed him out. Kathy continues, "So, Mr. Crumb's house got foreclosed, and Eddie is going to buy it on the courthouse steps." Paula interrupts and exclaims, "What? You've got to be kidding me. Why?" Kathy continues, "But, wait. Mr. Davies, the attorney, is seeing if the owner of the other three properties wants to sell them. So, Eddie wants to buy all four houses, and then bulldoze them down." Paula exclaims, "No. Tell me you're not." Eddie assures Paula, "Yeah, I am." Paula asks, "But, why?" Eddie explains, "I don't know. Just for fun, I guess. I can get it zoned commercial, and use it for a storage yard for cars, or my dad can store some of his construction equipment there. The lots are about a half acre each. So, that's 2 acres with a road right down the middle. Hearing that Mr. Crumb's house will be bulldozed, Mark casually asks, "Can I help?" Eddie assures Mark, "Of course, bro. I need someone to show me how to work a bulldozer." Mark tells Eddie, "A bulldozer with a large backhoe might make it go easier. We can rent one. It should take less than a day to knock all that shit down." Quite unexpectedly, Paula exclaims, "I'm ready." If Eddie's plan goes through, everyone apparently wants to be in on the fun. After pizza, Kathy tells Paula, "We're driving over to 2nd Street to take a look." Again, quite unexpectedly, Paula exclaims, "I'm coming." Looking at Eddie, Mark tells him, "I guess we're all going." Eddie tells Mark, "I just want to take a good look at it before I buy it." They all head to 2nd Street in their June buggies, ready to plan the future for that street. When they arrive at 2nd Street, the 4 dilapidated houses are not only in very bad condition, but the yards, including Mr. Crumb's, are now all overgrown. Getting out of their June buggies, they take a walk around the street. Mark asks Paula, "Are you okay?" Paula replies, "Yeah. This whole place looks like crap. But knowing that all of this shit will be gone soon, I'm okay. I'm good." Kathy tells Paula, "I'm knocking down Mr. Crumb's house." Paula exclaims, "I want to knock one down too." Pointing to the house across the street from Mr. Crumb, Paula announces, "I'm knocking that one down." Mark asks, "Why that one?" Paula replies, "Because it's the ugliest house on this street. And it's probably the ugliest house in the world." Kathy comforts Paula, telling her, "That's because the boogeyman lives there." Paula replies, "Ain't that the truth?" Paula finally agrees with Kathy that the house across the street from Mr. Crumb's house is the boogeyman's house. Eddie tells Kathy, "The best part about this is that the land is level. The main road is on the other side of where 1st Street was, and the train tracks are behind the houses on 2nd Street." Kathy mentions, "You can't even see where 1st Street was." Eddie tells Kathy, "I guess we'll get that too." Kathy asks, "How is that?" Eddie replies, "Squatters' rights." Pointing to the dead end, Eddie explains, "Behind that brick wall is the recycling plant. Their entrance is up on the main road. So, this would be like a private road to all 4 properties." Kathy is beginning to see how buying all 4 properties might be advantageous. So do Mark and Paula. While Eddie and Kathy were looking at the borders of the lots, Mark and Paula were talking with each other about their own plans. Paula asks Kathy, "If you guys get this, is there any chance we can buy some of it from you?" Eddie replies, "Sure. I don't care." Paula explains, "Mark was thinking about buying some heavy equipment someday, like a bulldozer or a small dump truck. And Mark's father has 2 trailers in his backyard, and no good place to keep them." Mark adds, "And there's that shitload of angle iron on the side of his house. This would be the perfect place to store stuff like that." Eddie looks at Kathy and tells her, "It looks like we can all put this place to use." Eddie then mentions, "My dad has a trailer that he uses once or twice a month. And he has that cement mixer that's sitting behind his house. He'd probably like to store that stuff here too. And he always talks about buying equipment, but says he has no place to store it. So, he always ends up renting stuff instead." Kathy exclaims, "So, then let's get it." The plan is now moving along. Eddie and Mark can put the 2 acres on 2nd Street to good use. Kathy and Paula are on board and, for the moment, are mostly interested in knocking the houses down. And the street, only about 400 feet long, will be like their own private road. Now, all they have to do is wait and see what happens over the next 2 weeks. Eddie has decided to meet with the Dean of Students, Dean Addison Grimsby, if only to clear his name. If he is to ever participate with the team again, he was told that the meeting is mandatory. So, Eddie arranged the meeting just to scratch one prerequisite of competing again off the list. As he waits to be called into the dean's office, Eddie wonders what the dean will have to say. Escorted to the dean's office, Eddie is a bit nervous, not knowing what to expect. He takes a seat across the desk from a stone-faced man who clearly gives the impression that he is judge, jury, and executioner. Eddie sits for a few minutes while the dean reviews some paperwork. Looking around the office at the furnishings and decor, Eddie gets the impression that the dean, whatever he does, must be considered important. It's not everyone who has an office furnished in such grandiose style. And the diploma on the wall indicates that the dean has a PhD in mathematics. Eddie surmises that the dean must be very smart. Dean Grimsby opens the meeting by stating, "Edward Boganskaya, did I pronounce that correctly?" Eddie replies, "Yes, sir." The dean immediately begins lecturing Eddie. "Now, it is my understanding that you are taking steroids, selling them for profit, or both." Eddie interrupts and replies, "That's completely false." The dean insists, "Please do not interrupt me again." "Is that clear?" The only thing now clear to Eddie is that the dean must be some sort of asshole, at least in Eddie's book. But Eddie cordially replies, "Yes, sir." The dean continues, orating, "The use of illicit drugs at this university is highly frowned upon. I am conducting an investigation to gain a full understanding of the accusations against you. Until then, you are suspended from competing on the track team, but you still may attend your classes." Eddie replies, "Okay." The dean is obviously unaware that Eddie does not attend classes. But Eddie lets the dean continue. Slamming the folder onto his desk and resuming his lecture, the dean tells Eddie, "Honestly, Edward, you have been a great embarrassment to this university. It is not every day that I have to deal with a situation as severe as this. While I hope for the best outcome for you, this looks very grim from my perspective." Laying it on the line, Dean Grimsby tells Eddie, "I really don't know why you wanted to meet with me today. This is an ongoing investigation, and to be quite frank, there's nothing I'm going to do until the investigation is completed. You will be notified of the date and time of your hearing. During your hearing, the results of the investigation will be presented to you, and the university's decision in the matter will be final." The hearing that Dean Grimsby is referring to is a meeting with the dean and other administrators that Eddie must attend in order to get back on the team. That small detail was not made clear to Eddie, who wants to get this all behind him as fast as possible. The dean then concludes, telling Eddie, "Until then, there's nothing that I can, or that I will, do. Now, unless there's anything else, I really need to get back to my business." Eddie replies, "Then, I guess we're done." As he gets up to leave, Eddie wonders why he even bothered to set up and attend the meeting with the dean. Eddie hasn't been to practice since being suspended from the team. He did, however, receive the news that he passed his drug test. No steroids were found in his urine. Even having a sample of what they were looking for, the lab reports that Eddie is clean. Since he passed the drug test, his suspension has partially been lifted by the dean of students. The dean informed Eddie that he may practice with the team, but he may not compete until the dean decides that he can. Eddie, however, has chosen to not return to the team. He has other things to keep him busy, such as building Johnson's and Bobby B's June buggies, which are coming along well. Eddie's absence seriously concerns Dr. Braun and Coach Herndon, and justifiably so. Leggett is taking Eddie's place in the 100-yard dash and the 4x440 relay. McCutcheon has been assigned to Eddie's place in the mile medley relay. Unfortunately, McCutcheon's and Leggett's performance is subpar, not even remotely close to Eddie's performance. Resulting from the change, neither the mile medley relay team nor the 4x440 relay team have placed in a race since Eddie left. And, needless to say, neither Leggett nor McCutcheon has placed in an event all year. But McCutcheon and Leggett got what they wanted. McCutcheon is no longer an alternate, and Leggett got bumped up a few notches, all at the expense of the team. Before practice one Wednesday, the upbeat tone of McCutcheon and Leggett is evident to all. In the locker room, Braden distinctly overhears McCutcheon imitating one of his rants, exclaiming, "Just suck it into your lung. Inject it into your vein. Just get it up to your brain. The Eddie man's living on the juice. And now he's hanging from a noose." Overheard by Braden, the officer is cued in, suspecting that McCutcheon and Leggett are definitely up to something. The Wednesday practice session brings relay drills, giving the athletes a break from the grueling workouts on Monday and Tuesday. The Monday and Tuesday workouts involve the training sled and intense interval training. On Wednesday, the relay drills give the athletes a bit of a break before returning to the Thursday and Friday workouts, when they are back on the training sled and interval training. The mile medley team gets on the track, running a race for time. Mark, the leadoff man, takes the baton. The gun is fired, and Mark is off. Coming around the curve, Mark approaches the transition zone. McCutcheon takes off, albeit quite a bit slower than Eddie normally does. Mark attempts to deliver the baton, but McCutcheon fails to receive the goods. As Mark and McCutcheon leave the transition zone without transferring the baton, Mark shoves the baton into McCutcheon's ass, sending McCutcheon to the ground. Mark drops the baton, throws his hands into the air, and walks off his run. Coach Herndon yells out, "Okay. Let's try that again. And let's get it right this time." Coach Herndon is used to the seamless transition between Mark and Eddie. Today's first transition between Mark and McCutcheon did not go very well. Mark picks up the baton and blatantly walks across the red zone, back to the starting line. Mark, however, continually looks to his left in case a stray javelin or discus comes his way. McCutcheon limps back to the transition zone, hoping the second attempt goes a bit better. The gun is fired, and Mark is off again. Coming around the curve for the second time, Mark approaches the transition zone where the look of fear is on McCutcheon's face. McCutcheon takes off, waiting for the delivery of the goods. Mark has to slow his pace considerably to transfer the baton, but this time McCutcheon is somehow able to grab the baton. Mark, just glad to get the transition completed, stands off to the side and watches across the track as McCutcheon approaches Braden. As McCutcheon approaches the transition zone, Braden takes off. Not being able to deliver the baton to Braden, both Braden and McCutcheon leave the transition zone, failing to complete the transfer. Coach Herndon yells out, "Okay. I've had enough already. Let's try to get it right this time." Mark takes the baton again, having to repeat the procedure several times. At the end of the afternoon, the relay team finishes with a whopping 3 legal transfers of the baton involving McCutcheon. At the end of the day, Coach Herndon decides to reassign McCutcheon to the lead-off position. The coach's decision is solely for the reason of making McCutcheon responsible for transferring the baton once instead of twice during the race. In the locker room, McCutcheon tells Leggett, "Did you see that out there? That Mark guy intentionally shoved the baton into my butt." Leggett informs McCutcheon, "He's just taking it out on you because Ed is gone." McCutcheon laments, "Yeah, well, he's making me look bad." Leggett suggests, "So, figure out a way to make him look bad." McCutcheon, lambasted several times today by Coach Herndon, considers Leggett's advice. McCutcheon contemplates how he can make Mark look bad. With someone as skilled and witty as Mark, McCutcheon has a very difficult task ahead of him if he is to make Mark look inferior in any way. A little farther down in the locker room, Mark, Braden, and Johnson realize they have lost all hope of winning a relay race this year, unless, of course, Eddie returns. Mark tells Braden, "If McCutcheon doesn't get his ass in gear, I'm going to shove the baton up his ass until he gets it right." Braden informs Mark, "Yo, bro. Coach Herndon made McCutcheon the lead-off man. he's handing off to you. Quite disgusted, Mark replies, then, I'll just accidentally jam the baton into his balls when I take off. Braden exclaims, I don't want to miss that. Mark then asks, I wonder where they'll put Leggett in the 4x440 relay. Startled, Braden exclaims, I forgot about that. Dang. I ain't cutting his ass no slack. Mark replies, me either. The next meet will prove interesting. Fortunately, for the tribe, they still have their individual events, which they still are likely to win. With dropped batons, failed transitions, and slow starts, the best the relay teams can hope for is to finish the race without being disqualified. But, on the optimistic side, Coach Herndon has reassigned the relay legs to minimize the possibility of mistakes. Toward the end of the week, on Thursday, Eddie calls Mr. Davies to find out about the other three properties on 2nd Street. Eddie finds out that Carmen and Lang, LLP, will be glad to sell all three properties. Not only will they sell them, they will sell all three at a discount. Mr. Davies relays the price to Eddie, and Eddie agrees to buy all three, telling Mr. Davies that he has the funds. Carmen and Lang, LLP, like Mr. Crum, expected the area to go commercial, but there was one lone holdout who simply would not sell his house and move. As it turns out, the lone holdout was Mr. Crum. So, Mr. Crum and Carmen and Lang, LLP, were deadlocked for years. Since Mr. Davies represents Eddie in the transaction, he suggests that Eddie pursue acquiring the three properties as quickly as possible. Should Carmen and Lang, LLP, discover Mr. Crum's house has been foreclosed on, they will certainly show up at the courthouse and bid on the property. Eddie asks Mr. Davies about drawing up a contract. Mr. Davies informs Eddie that he will take care of all the details. Eddie tells him to go ahead and arrange the sale. Eddie and Mr. Davies agree to meet tomorrow, when Eddie will sign the contract. The next day, Eddie drops by to see Mr. Davies about the three houses on 2nd Street. Entering Mr. Davies' office, after a brief conversation, Eddie asks, "So, how is it looking?" Moving quicker than Eddie expected, Mr. Davies informs Eddie, "I have the contract all prepared. I strongly suspect they are standing in front of their fax machine right now, waiting for the signed contract to appear." Eddie asks, "What's a fax machine?" Mr. Davies tells Eddie, "It's a way to send a picture of a document over the phone lines." Mr. Davies explains the contract to Eddie, which goes fairly quickly. Filling in a few items on the contract, Mr. Davies asks, "When do you want to close on the properties?" Eddie replies, "Is sometime next week okay?" Eddie wants to secure the properties before the first Tuesday of the month. Mr. Davies replies, "We'll write it in. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't accept it." Mr. Davies asks a few other questions, and once the contract is ready, Eddie signs it. After transmitting the signed contract over the fax machine, Mr. Davies tells Eddie, "Well, the ball's in their court. I'll let you know as soon as I hear anything." Before Eddie leaves, he and Mr. Davies talk a while, continuing their conversation about Mr. Crum and how he has been interfering with the track team over the last few years. Eddie explains the incident of when Mr. Crum threatened him, stating that he would not graduate if he does not help Chucky stay out of jail. Mr. Davies is quite amused at the stories Eddie has and what Eddie had to endure during his high school years. Mr. Davies has a few of his own stories as well. They both wonder why Mr. Crum is so averse to athletes. As Eddie is leaving, the paralegal hands Mr. Davies a copy of the contract, signed and accepted by Carmen and Lang, LLP. Looking over the contract, Mr. Davies tells Eddie, "It looks like you're in luck. They accepted the contract. They must have been standing in front of their fax machine." Quite surprised, Eddie asks, "Wow. That was fast. Now what do I do?" Mr. Davies informs Eddie, "I'll have the deeds prepared, and we can close next week, as planned." Your job is to bring me a certified check for the sales price, closing fees, and your part of the taxes for this year. I'll let you know the bottom line early next week. Mr. Davies gives Eddie a copy of the contract, and Eddie heads home. A stormy day causes the university track team to practice indoors one Tuesday morning. This is good news to some, particularly those who detest using Eddie's resistance sled and running when the temperature and humidity are not just right. Bobby B. and Erika even arrive a bit late, hitching a ride from Mitchell in his four-seat Opel 1900. Even Kathy and Paula have left their June buggy's garage today. Since the distance team and sprinters are all together, sharing the indoor arena, practice begins with the interval training drill. Certain groups form during the drill. Johnson, Barbara, Mitchell, Akinmola, and Stone form a group, and all run together. Among them, a vague competition exists between Mitchell and Stone. And Akinmola is always chasing Mitchell. The synergy between these runners gives them a better workout. Among the sprinters, Kathy, Paula, and Erika form a group of their own. Erika, a bit better at distance than Kathy or Paula, adds synergy to their group. Mark runs with Braden and Hoffer, all of them missing Eddie. Leggett runs with McCutcheon, if it could even be called running at all. And a few team members go at their own pace, competing with either themselves or the clock. The clock is always a formidable opponent. The clock shows you how well you did and immediately suggests that you could have done better. The clock has no compassion if you are having a bad day. During the drill, as Kathy and Paula are taking their two recovery laps, Kathy mentions to Paula, the undynamic duo is at it again. Paula asks, what's up? Kathy explains, McCrutchen and Lug Nut aren't running at all. Pointing to the side of the arena with the entrances to the locker rooms, Kathy points out, when they get to that side of the track, they run like snails. Paula comments, they always run like snails. Kathy laughs and tells Paula, you're sounding just like Mark. But just watch them. Dropping to the inside of the track to sprint, Paula clearly notices what Kathy was referring to. McCutcheon and Leggett seem to be inspecting the exit doors, perhaps figuring out a way to escape from practice. After 45 minutes of running the interval drill, Dr. Braun blows his whistle, and everyone meets in front of the bleachers. Dr. Braun announces, for the next half of our workout, we'll be running relay drills. We'll be running the drill with four batants. Everyone will be in rotation, and who you will transfer to or receive from will be completely random. Coach Herndon, Dr. Paxton, and myself will be watching your handoff skills. And please, let's not have a collision on the track. Dr. Braun has adapted Mr. Fraser's workout routines that he learned from Eddie, Kathy, and a few other tribe members. The resistance sled, interval training drills, and relay drills have stepped the university team up a few notches. It is unquestionable that Mr. Harris, at the middle school, develops superior talent every year. When the track athletes enter high school, Mr. Fraser and Mr. Zunde take their skills and abilities to the next level. Mr. Fraser, who once almost made the Olympics, not only understands how to train, but how to motivate the athletes as well. His training methods have once again been proven, this time at the university. The handoff skill taught to the sprinters by Mr. Fraser is a non-visual non-verbal exchange. During this exchange, the runner ready to receive the baton is looking back at the runner approaching the transition zone. The outgoing runner then carefully judges when it is time to leave. When the time comes, the outgoing runner takes off, facing forward, reaching top speed as quickly as possible. The incoming runner uses an upsweep motion to deliver the baton in the hand of the outgoing runner. Once the baton is transferred, the outgoing runner should already be near or at full speed. With a seamless transition, very little time is lost during the exchange. During each runner's leg, the baton always remains in the same hand and is never switched to the other hand. Switching the baton to the other hand causes the runner to lose time. If the first runner in the race leaves the blocks with the baton in the right hand, the baton is delivered to the left hand of the runner running the second leg. The runner running the second leg transfers the baton to the right hand of the runner running the third leg. And the runner running the fourth leg will receive the baton in his left hand. Runners must be equally proficient delivering or receiving the baton with either hand. The non-visual non-verbal exchange takes a lot of skill and practice. Visual exchanges are always accompanied with a break in cadence or slowing of one or both runners. The outgoing runner simply cannot run at top speed if they are looking behind them as the baton is transferred. The non-visual exchange, if properly executed, will not result in a break in cadence or slowing of either runner. The non-visual non-verbal exchange is why Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson work so well together. They have been using this technique since the 8th grade. It is the only technique they know. It is also the reason why Kathy, Paula, Barbara, and Erica perform so well together. With years of practice behind them, each relay team member can accurately gauge when to leave, how fast to run, and expect the baton to be properly delivered regardless of which of the other three runners is delivering the baton. This is also the reason why substituting a less skilled runner within their relay teams usually results in disaster. On the track, the relay drill appears to be running like a well-oiled machine. Some handoffs go well, yet others go not so well. But that is the purpose of the drill, to improve the skill one has. The coaches prefer that everyone learn and perfect the non-visual non-verbal exchange, and that is what the team is specifically practicing today. Johnson hands off to Braden, and the transition goes smoothly, as it has for the last few hundred times. Braden sprints 220 yards, handing off to another runner at the transition zone. This time the handoff goes well. Occasionally, when a runner skilled with the non-visual handoff technique is matched with a runner of less skill, the handoff does not go as well. Braden's handoff to the next runner does not go quite as well. Mark approaches the transition zone, seeing Leggett directly ahead of him. Leggett, aspiring to take Eddie's place on the 4x440 relay team and the mile medley relay team, wants to earn a medal or some type of recognition through the efforts of Mark, Braden, and Johnson. Leggett, however, is studying the architecture of the arena as Mark approaches. Quickly realizing he should have left earlier, Leggett leaves after Mark enters the transition zone. Worse yet is that Leggett has the wrong hand out to receive the baton. Attempting to hand off the baton, Mark slams into the back of Leggett, who crashes to the floor. Dr. Braun blows his whistle, waiting for the track to clear. Leggett is slow to get up. As everyone waits, Johnson whispers to Braden, "That was a good takedown." Braden replies, "If that guy wants Eddie's spot, he'd better learn to get his ass moving on time." Leggett gets up, and Dr. Braun tells him to finish his leg. Leggett, moving slower than usual around the track, believes Mark collided with him intentionally. Coach Herndon suspects the same but, being military, allows Leggett to learn by experience. If Leggett wants to win, he will have to adapt and learn. It would be also beneficial if Leggett, now a senior, learns when to start running to accept the delivery of the baton. Inevitably, McCutcheon, not much more skilled than Leggett, ends up on the track. This time out, McCutcheon is lucky enough to be the one to receive the baton from Braden. McCutcheon repeatedly looks forward and behind him when Braden comes around the curve. As Braden approaches, McCutcheon, a bit intimidated by Braden, panics and freezes. Braden, having to slow his pace considerably, leaves his lane and shoves the baton into McCutcheon's rear end. Braden then helps McCutcheon find the floor with a brisk shove to the back. With a little help from Braden, McCutcheon goes down hard, prompting Dr. Braun to again blow his whistle. With McCutcheon laying on the track, Braden exclaims, "What kind of shit was that? You were supposed to get your ass moving. How do you expect us to win a race if your ass is just standing there? Disgusted with McCutcheon, Braden kicks the baton that is laying on the floor and exclaims, A dead tree can run faster than you. Now, get your fat ass off that floor and get back on the track. And if you don't get your ass moving next time, I'm gonna shove that baton up your ass so hard, you're gonna need a surgeon to get it out. McCutcheon gets up, albeit very slowly. Looking over at Dr. Braun and Coach Herndon for sympathy, McCutcheon gets none. Coach Herndon tells McCutcheon, you heard him. Get back on the track, and let's see if you can get it right this time. Braden picks up the baton and tells McCutcheon, this time, get your flimsy ass moving. If you don't, I'm gonna run your fat ass over. Braden takes off, restarting the drill. McCutcheon stands in the transition zone, with all eyes on him. Some team members are secretly hoping to see McCutcheon go down again, if only to hear another one of Braden's pep talks. The coaching staff freely allows Braden to lecture McCutcheon. It simply saves them the trouble. Approaching the transition zone again, Braden yells, Go, when it is time for McCutcheon to run. McCutcheon's fear of getting a baton shoved up his ass stimulates him to actually take off this time. Running with his hand behind him, McCutcheon awaits the baton. Braden delivers the baton, and McCutcheon takes off. Dr. Braun whispers to Coach Herndon, I hate to say this, but apparently getting the baton shoved into his ass once or twice is what it takes. Coach Herndon replies, I really like this Braden guy. He would have been a great asset to the military. It's too bad that he's colorblind. But I'm glad he's with us. Coach Herndon apparently relates to Braden quite well. The remainder of practice goes somewhat better. Knowing that a baton could be shoved into your rear end and nothing is done about it seems to be the motivation some of the athletes need to perform better. Fortunately, for McCutcheon, random chance did not allow for Braden to hand off to him again today. At the end of the practice session, the storm outside is nothing compared to the storm that was on the track today.